Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Chaf Tet Amud Aleph on the second line. The Gemara just went through the five items that transpired on Shivasar B'Tammuz and explained to us how we knew that those five items took place on Shivasar B'Tammuz. Now the Gemara moves on to the subsequent five that are enumerated in the Mishnah, which are the five items that took place on Tisha B'Av. The Gemara brings the first one, which is B'Tisha B'Av, Nigzar Al Avotenu Shelo Yikansu La'aretz Minalon. How do we know that's the case, that the Meraglim came back and the Gzeirah was on Tisha B'Av, Dichtiv? It says, Vayhi b'chodesh harishon, b'shana ha-shanit, b'achad l'chodesh, hukam ha-mishkan. So we know that the Mishkan went into service on Rosh Chodesh Nisan in the second year. V'amamar, shana rishona asa Moshe et ha-mishkan. In the first year, Moshe built the Mishkan, starting from Motzei Yom HaKippurim, in the first year in the Midbar until Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And then, in the second year, at the beginning of the second year, Moshe puts the Mishkan into service, and he sent the Meraglim. Then in Parshat Balotcha, the Bnei Yisrael begin to travel from Har Sinai. That happens in the second year, in the second month, on the 20th of the month, or the 20th of Iyar. Uchtiv. And subsequent to that, it says, how far did they travel? Vayisu mehar Hashem derech shloshet yamim. And then traveled from Har Shem 3 days. Amar Rami Chama Bar Chanina, oto yom saru meachrei Hashem. On that day, when they reached their destination, they left Hashem. Uchtiv, and it says there, Be'asafsuf asher bikirbo hit'avu ta'ava, v'yashuvu v'yivku gam b'nei Yisrael. So that is in Parshat Balotcha. That's the time that B'nai Israel are complaining about the fact that they don't like the man. There are other complaints there as well. And then it says, Zechtiv at Chodesh Yamim, that Hashem is going to provide them slav, is going to provide them their basar of for Chodesh Yamim, for a month's time. Dahavu Esrim V'tartin B'Sivan. That gets you to the 29th of Sivan. Uchtiv V'tisager Miriam Shivat Yamim. And then, on the 29th of Sivan, we have the story of Miriam at the end of Parshat Balotcha, where she is sequestered outside of the Machaneh for speaking Lashon Hara neged Moshe for 7 days. Tavlu Esrim V'tisha B'Sivan. That brings us to the 29th of Sivan. Uchtiv. And then it says, the next parsha that begins after the sequestering of Miriam, Ishlach Lecha Anashim. That is the time that Moshe sends out the Miraglim. Alright, so now, if we take this all together, there's actually a machloket in the Rishonim, how to read this. We'll use Rashi's interpretation first. Rashi says that on the 20th Iyar, they began to travel. And they traveled for 3 days, which is the 20th, the 21st, and the 22nd. Those are the 3 days in which they travel. Then immediately after that, they get themselves in trouble with the Asafsuf, Asher B'Gurul here to Avu Tava. And then Hashem promises them for the subsequent 30 days that they're going to receive the oath, they're going to receive the basar for those 30 days. Now Rashi says it's not 30 days, it says Chodesh Yamim. Chodesh Yamim is 29 days, like Chodesh HaLevana. So Rashi says that they received the meat then for 29 days after traveling for 3 days. And Rashi says, when it says Vayis'u Mehar Hashem, they're darshaning Mehar as Maher. They left quickly. And quickly meaning that they left Saru Me'achrei Hashem. They left Hashem very quickly. They went off the Derech very quickly, which are the subsequent stories in Parshat Balotcha about the difficulties that and the complaints that B'nai Israel encounter after that point. And that story is the subsequent story about the Slav. So Rashi says if you take that, you have 29 days after the 3 days in which they received the Basar Of. So if you look at that, you have the 23rd of Iyar, the 24th, the 25th, 26th, 27th, 28th, 29th, that gives you 7 days. Plus additional 22 days from Iyar gets you to the 29 days that they received the Basar. And that's what the Gemara said here. On the 22nd of Sivan, they received the Slav until that point in time. So that's what the Gemara says. That takes us all the way to Esrim Vitartin B'Sivan. Then it says, Vatisager Miriam, that Miriam is sequestered at that point. which is an additional 7 days, and that brings you to the 29th of Sivan. So that's where we're up to. And then Moshe sends the Meraglim on the 29th of Sivan, according to Rashi, at least according to the way Bach reads it. He sends them on the 29th of Sivan. Sivan is a Malay month, and therefore it's going to be 30 days. So now you have one day on the 30th of Sivan, and then you have the next month, which is Tammuz. Tammuz is 29 days. It's always a chaser that gives you 30 days. And then you need 10 more days to get you to the 40 days that the Meraglim went. That would land you on the 10th of Av. And that's exactly what the Gemara is going to ask now. It doesn't turn out to be the 9th of Av. It actually turns out to be the 10th of Av. So then the Gemara says, V'tanya, B'srim v'tisha b'sivan shalach Moshe Meraglim. On the 29th of Sivan, Moshe sends out the Meraglim. Uchtiv. And then it says, V'yeshuvu mitur ha'aretz miketz arba'im yom. They came back from investigating, checking out the land after 40 days. So, Hani Arbaim Yom, Nechi Chad Avu. Tisha B'Av turns out to be 39 days and not 40 days, because 40 days would fall out on the 10th of Av. So, Rabbi, Tammuz Dahishata Maluya, that the Tammuz of that year they made into a Malay and not a Chaser, into a 30-day month. Dichtiv, they quote the Pasuk from Eicha, which says, Kara Alai Moed Lishbor Bachurai. Now, the Pashtut of Pasuk is that Hashem made it like a festival, an appointed time to destroy the young ones. So, as if it was a holiday for murdering the young ones. So, it's a euphemism in a sense. But now the Gemara says, Kara Alai Moed, that they made a Moed. And here they classify Rosh Chodesh as a Moed that the Gemara in Arachin discusses. Uchtiv. But Disagol Eda, Vaitnu et Kolam, Vaivkuam, Balailahu. On that day that the Meraglim returned, the people began to cry on that night. So the way the Bach learns it is that, according to Rashi, the days end on the 8th. The Meraglim came back very late on the day of the 8th, and the 40th was the 9th, the beginning of the 9th, and they cry on that night. That's the night of Tisha B'Av. And that's what the Gemara is about to say, that the crying on that night is what generated the problems of Tisha B'Av. So that's the way Rashi does the enumeration of the calculation. Tosafot disagrees with Rashi on 2 points. One point is that he thinks there are 30 days that they received the slav. When it says Chodesh Yamim, it means 30 days and not 29 days. In addition to that, the Bach claims that Tosafot believes that the Meraglim didn't come back until late on the 9th. They came back, not like Rashi says, late on the 8th, going into the 9th, but rather late on the 9th. Now, in order to do that, Tosafot really has to figure out how to get rid of one more day in here, because the way Rashi did it, he made it a 29-day month, and that's how he got the 40 days to land on the 9th of Tisha B'Av. But if you say that the amount of time they received the basar and the oaf in the midbar was 30 days and not 29 days, then you have an extra day in there. So as the Bach explains, Tosafot says that when it comes to the 3 days in the beginning and then the counting of the basar oaf, he overlaps the day, that on the 22nd of Iyar, when we left on the 20th of Iyar, so 3 days is 20, 21, 22. And then they had about Sasuf Hitavuta Ava. That's already starting on the 22nd. Not on the 23rd of Iyar, but on the 22nd of Iyar. By doubling up those days, that's how he makes up for that extra day. Now, what's interesting is that Tosafot says that the Meraglim came back late on the 9th. And I'll show you later in the Gemara why that's very interesting. That's the Shita of Tosafot. Whereas Rashi says that they, according to the Bach, they came back late on the 8th. And the crying and the problems were on the night of Tisha B'Av itself, on the night of the ninth. And that's what the Gemara says now. Amar Rabba Amar Rabbi Yochanan. It's either Oto Hayom or Oto Alayla Tisha B'Av Haya. Amar Lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Atem Bechitim Bechiyah Shel Chinam. You cried for pointless reasons. Ani Kovei Lechem Bechiyah LeDorot. Therefore, I'm going to make sure that when you cry, you're going to not be shedding crocodile tears, but you're going to really be crying for a significant issue. So that's the punishment that came to Bnei Yisrael, which is that they cried for naught. They cried over the fact that Hashem is not going to take them into the land. He's not going to protect them. He's going to let them be killed by the nations in there. They will not be able to overcome them. Hashem says that I already promised you that I would take you in. And therefore it's a b'chiyah shel chinam. But since you cried, I'll make sure that those tears are not wasted and you're going to be crying, because this is going to be an inauspicious day. And which other things will happen, which, of course, is the Churban HaBayit. So that's how Rashi learns that the night of Tisha B'Av, Oto HaLayla Tisha B'Av Haya, that night when they cried was the night of Tisha B'Av. And that's why it was significant that they cried on that night, because in the future there will be terrible events that take place on Tisha B'Av as an inauspicious day. Charav HaBayit Berishona, the second of the five items mentioned that happened on Tisha B'Av, was that the first Beit HaMikdash was destroyed on Tisha B'Av, Dichtiv. Now, it's not, Dichtiv is a little difficult. It says, B'Chodesh HaChamishi, B'Shiva LaChodesh, in the fifth month, which is Av, on the seventh of the month, he, Shnat Teishasre Shana, the Melech Nebuchadnezzar, it's the 19th year of Nebuchadnezzar, Melech Bavel, Ba Nebuzaradin, Rav HaTabachim, the general of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuzaradin comes, Eved Melech Bavel, is in servitude or in service of Melech Bavel, Yerushalayim Vayisrof et Beit Hashem, and he burns the Beit Hashem. Now that's on the 7th of Av. That's found in Melachim Bet. In Yirmiyahu, when it describes the same events, it says, B'chodesh HaChamishi, Be'asor LaChodesh, in the 5th month, on the 10th of the month, Hishnat Shasre Shana the Melech Nebuchadrezzar, over there in Yirmiyahu it says Retzar, not Netzar, Melech Bavel, Ba'Nebuzaradan Av Tabachim, so on the 10th of Av, the general of Melech Bavel, Nebuzaradan comes, Amad Lifnei Melech Bavel, that's the equivalent of Eved, the Melech Bavel, that he stood before Melech Bavel, means he served Melech Bavel, B'Yerushalayim, he served at Beit Hashem, and he burns down the Beit HaMikdash. V'tanya, Yev Shalomar B'Shiv'a, can't say that it took place on the 7th, Shrek V'Arnimar B'Asor, and Yirmiyahu it says it was on the 10th. Yev Shalomar B'Asor, you can't say it was on the 10th, because Shrek V'Arnimar, it says in Melechim that it was B'Shiv'a, HaKetzad. How do I reconcile these psukim that say it's the 7th and the 10th? B'Shiv'a Nechnesu Nechrim Le'Echal. On the 7th of Tisha B'Av, the Nechrim already entered into the Echal. V'achlu V'kukulu Bo Shvi U'Shmini. They were eating and partying for the 7th and 8th of Av. U'Tshi'i Samuch L'Chashicha. On the 9th of Av, close to sunset, that means at the tail end of the day of the 9th, Hitzitu Bo Et Or. They lit the Mikdash on fire, Vayadulik Valech Kol Ayom Kulo. And then it burnt for the entire subsequent day, which is the 10th. Shinemar Oilanu Kifanahayom Kinatu Tzilei Arev. So woe is to us when the day is closing. Kinatu Tzilei Arev, when the shadows of night are lengthening. Meaning as the day wore on towards the tail end of the day, that's when all the bad happened. That's when the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. Now, this is interesting because that means that the Churban HaBayit took place late on the 9th of Tisha B'Av, and that would be consistent with what Tosafot says with regards to the Meraglim, that the Meraglim, according to the Bach in Tosafot, returned late on the day of the 9th. And that means that the Chet HaMeraglim takes place at the same time that the Churban HaBayit takes place, which is very late on the 9th of Av. Versus Rashi's explanation, where the Meraglim came back late on the 8th, and then on the night of the 9th, that's where the problem was. Tosafot says it happens later in the day of the 9th itself, and that's consistent with what happened to the Churban HaBayit. And so that's an interesting distinction or difference within the position of Rashi and Tosafot, but it might explain why Tosafot thinks they come late on the 9th, because you want to have it match up with that which transpired with regards to the Beit HaMikdash. V'hainu dama Rabbi Yochanan, ilmalei hayiti ba'oto ador. If I was in that generation, lo kavati ve'lo be'asiri, mipnei shurubo shalechal bo nisraf. Rabbi Yochanan says, I have David's question. Why would we have Tisha B'Av on the 9th then? Tisha B'Av should have been on the 10th, and Rabbi Yochanan says, if I lived in that generation of the Churban HaBayit, I would have made Tisha B'Av on the 10th of Av. V'rabbonon, so then what's the sheet of the Rabbonon who disagree with Rabbi Yochanan? Atchalta de purunata adifo, that the beginning of the Puranut is the most significant point of time. And therefore, we commemorate the beginning of the Puranut, even though the majority of the Puranut took place on the 10th. Now, that has important implications, both of these statements. The statement of Rabbi Yochanan has an important implication, as well as the Shita of the Rabbonon. The Shita of Rabbi Yochanan has an important implication because our practice today is to keep the Avelut of the 9 days, or really the Shavuot Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, onto the 10th. That we don't stop the Avelut of Tisha B'Av until Chatzot on the 10th. That is because of exactly this reason, which is that the majority of the Mikdash was Nisraf during the day of the 10th, not the 9th. Therefore, we move the Avelut, or continue the Avelut, through the middle of the day of the 10th until Chatzot on the 10th. Now, the Gra was against that, and the Gra believed that once the ninth was over, there was no more Avelut, based on our Gemara. Our Gemara says that's the Shita of Rabbi Yochanan. The Shita of Rabbonon is that Tisha B'Av Chadralta the Puranata is what matters. After that, there is no longer any Avelut, and therefore he objected to that practice of giving Avelut through the tenth. But that is our Minhag, and that is our practice, which is to keep Avelut through the middle of the day on the tenth, unless Tisha B'Av falls out on a Thursday, or Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbat. When it falls out on a Thursday, there are dispensations, as we're going to see later in today's Gemara as well, for Kavod HaShabbat, which will allow you to do certain things even before Chatzot on the 10th or even the night before. When Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbat and is Nidchet to Sunday, that means we're already celebrating Tisha B'Av on the 10th already. So therefore, when Tisha B'Av is over, the Avelut is over as well, because at least and by the next morning, the Avelut is over, because that's already the 11th and not the 10th. So in those two cases, we have an exception to that rule of keeping the Avelut afterwards. The other thing that's significant here is the position of the Rabbanan. The position of the Rabbanan is the Purnata, Atchalta de Purnata Adifa. The beginning of the Purnut is more significant. Now that has important implications, which is, I think, a Hashkafic implication about how we deal with tragedy and how we deal with things that are pivotal in our history. Over here, the Churban HaBayit is something that is tragic. It is something that is pivotal in changing the whole way that Yahadut works. But the Rabbanan say that as soon as you have Atchalta Purnata, that's what matters. And that means that as long as an event has yet to transpire, as long as something hasn't happened, we daven, we try as hard as possible to stop it from happening. But once the tragedy has happened, and it's already in motion, for instance here, where the Churban HaBayit is basically a fait accompli, because they've already lit it on fire, it's going to be burnt, it's gone. At that point in time, we switch from a position of Avelut already to a position of Nechama. And that's even true on Tisha B'Av itself. Our practice on Tisha B'Av itself is to keep the Avelut from the morning. And then when we reach after Chatzot on Tisha B'Av, we lighten a little bit the load of the Avelut. We start to come out of that depth of Avelut and that depth of mourning over the Mikdash. And that's exactly this point, which is once the Churban HaBayit takes place, our job no longer is to daven for it and to mitabel on it, but it's to figure out how to live without the Beit HaMikdash. That is now the reality. And once the reality is transpired or has transpired, at that moment, we have to switch our focus and switch our focus to Nechama and switch our focus to the point of figuring out what is life going to be post the Mikdash. How is the world going to look after the Mikdash is destroyed? And so I think that's an important Ashkafic point that the Rabbanan are making here. The fact that we celebrate Tisha B'Av on the 9th shows us exactly that point. That you can daven, you can try, you can be mitabel until the point of decision, where it actually happens. Once it's happened, then your job is no longer to dwell on it. It's no longer to perseverate on the Churban HaBayit, but rather to figure out, what do we do now? And that's why the 10th is not Tisha B'Av and the 9th is Tisha B'Av, because the 10th already is a time period where it's already leading into Shabbat Nachamu already. It's a time of Nechama, even late on the 9th, in that way that we need to focus then on how to move forward instead of on the Avelut itself of Tisha B'Av. All right, now the Gemara brings the third item that is mentioned in our Mishnah, which is that the Bayit HaSheni was destroyed on Tisha B'Av. So the Gemara says, "Ubshniyah minolan." How do we know that the Bayit HaSheni was destroyed on Tisha B'Av? The Tanya, "Migaglim zchut liyom zakai v'chova liyom chayav." Rashi eliminates the word "yom" in the statement. He says, "Migaglim zchut lizakai v'chova lichayav." So that we have to make a determination. We really don't know exactly when the Mikdash was destroyed. So our assumption is going to be that it was on Tisha B'Av, because that makes the most sense. If it's already an inauspicious day, and since it's an inauspicious day, therefore we're going to assume that's when it happened, since it probably happened around that time period, it was close. We don't know the exact date, but we're going to assume that the date was the same as the first bite because of the nature of the day. And that truthfully becomes a mantra with regards to many tragedies that happen in Judaism after that point in time, where Tisha B'Av becomes the focal point for remembering or commemorating those days. And so that you find amongst the Rishonim, as well as amongst the Achronim, them pointing out many different things that take place on the 9th of Av, including the expulsion from Spain, and other types of tragedies. Even though, if you do the calculations, they don't turn out to be on Tisha B'Av, they're very close. But, because Tisha B'Av is an inauspicious day, and it's the day for commemorating tragedy, therefore they say that the Spanish expulsion took place on Tisha B'Av. Even though it may not have exactly been on that day, it was close enough. Plus, the assumption is that Tisha B'Av is the day for commemorating these events. And so therefore, Tisha B'Av takes on this idea of Megalgalin, Chovah LeYom Chayav, that assuming that something bad happens, we place it on the day of Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av becomes the day for collecting all of these terrible tragedies in Jewish history. And now the Gemara launches into an agarato, a little bit about the Churban HaBayit. It says, Amru, Kishacharab Beit HaMikdash Barishona, when the first bayit was destroyed, Oto Ayom, on that day, here we have in our Gemara, it's Erev Tisha B'Av Haya, but it's got to be, it was Tisha B'Av Haita. It was Tisha B'Av itself. Motzei Shabbat. It was a Sunday. It was Motzei Shabbat. Haya. Motzei Shvi'it. It was the eighth year of the cycle. It was after Shvi'it. Haita. Mishmarta Shel Yeho Yariv. Haita. It was the Mishmar of Yeho Yariv, who is the first of the 24 Mishmarot that are enumerated in Divrei Hayamim. So the Gemara is giving the context in which the Churban takes place. Some of these calculations are important, including that it's Motzei Shvi'it. The Gemara from then calculates in other places, like in Arachin, in other places, calculates how many Shmitot did they not keep when they were in Eretz Yisrael, as well as how to calculate the Shmitah from that point forward. I mean, when is the Shmitah year, based on the fact that the Churban HaBayit was on a Motzei Shvi'it. So, V'alevim ayu omrim Shira, the Levim on that point, when the Churban was taking place, were saying the Shira of the Churban Tamid, the Shirat Ayom. V'amdim al duchanam, they were standing on the platform in which the Levim practiced their shir every day. Uma shira hayu omrim. And what was that song that they were singing? It's from today's Shir Shel Yom, which is a Wednesday Shir Shel Yom, which says, Vayoshev alehem et onam uvratam yatzmitem. That Hashem pays them back for their iniquity. Uvratam yatzmitem. And He cuts them off in their own evilness. Velo hispikru lomar yatzmitem Hashem elokeinu. They don't get to finish off the pasuk that says Hashem will cut them off. Ad shebo nachrim b'kav shum. Until the Beit HaMikdash was breached and the nachrim entered and destroyed it, they didn't get to finish the pasuk, which is obviously symbolic, because the pasuk is talking about how Hashem will cut off those that are attacking and subjugating Bnei Yisrael. And over here they don't get to say it, meaning that the yad hanachri is on the upper hand here, and they are destroying, and they are taking out their wrath on the Jews, and Hashem is not there and not cutting them off. He's not stopping them. So the fact that they didn't get to finish it was symbolic in that way. Whereas, now we have to ask the question, which is, wait a minute, isn't this Sunday? So what are they doing saying the Shir Shel Yom, Shel Yom Revi'i? So as Rashi over here says, V'hu Shir Shel Yom Revi'i, V'hai Da'amri Le B'Yom Rishon, Elaya Ba'alma, Hava D'Nafal Pumayu. It was a kina that fell into their mouth by mistake. Meaning that whenever they were saying it just happened that way, whether it was a mistake, obviously it's not a mistake, Hashem intended it that way, but that was the kina that was said in order to be relevant to the day. So even though it wasn't the shir shel yom, it was the shir that the Levim were saying at that point in time. V'chein bishnia. The same thing happened in the Bayit HaSheni. Meaning that the Churban HaBayit HaSheni was on the same setup or the same context as the Bayit HaRishon. Now, the next thing in the Mishnah was Nilkada Beitar, the Beitar which captured on Tisha B'Av, that is Gemara, that we have simply a Mesorah for. Nilkada Beitar is significant because it's during the Mered Bar Kokhba, about 60 years post the Churban, after the Bar Kokhba revolt is successful at somewhat removing the Roman rule. And it seems to be that they were able to establish at some point in time some sort of independent rule over Eretz Yisrael, some sort of sovereignty for the Jews over Eretz Yisrael. And they did print coins from the Bar Kokhba revolt, on which they do have pictures of the Mikdash. So it seems to be that they were successful in some ways in the Bar Kokhba revolt. That all comes to a screeching halt with the capture of Beitar by the Romans and the destruction of Beitar. And that really ends the Mered Bar Kokhba. And that happens on Tisha B'Av. And the last one is Nechrasha Ha'ir. that the city of Yerushalayim was plowed over. It was plowed over in order to take away any hope by the Jews that the Mikdash would ever be rebuilt. I mean, as long as the Jews thought there might be some return or some chance to rebuild the Mikdash, the Romans believed that they would continue to rebel or object to their rule. So what they do is Nechash Ha'ir, when they plow over the city, and then actually at the time change the name of the city, also so that it's no longer Yerushalayim, was to basically show the Jews that this was the end, that it was never going to be returned to Yerushalayim and the Mikdash would never be rebuilt. So Nechash Ha'ir is also another closing point or point of finality where there's no turning back. The Churban is very final at that point in time, and that also happens on Tisha B'Av. Tanya, Keshe, our Girsa is Harav, but the Girsa should be probably, and according to many of the Mefarshim, Keshe Harash. Tunus Rufus Arashat Eichal. When Tunus Rufus plowed over the area of the Eichal, Nigzaira Gzeiral Rabban Gamliel the Hariga. That same time, Rabban Gamliel, there was a decree put out by the Romans that he should be killed. Ba'adon Echad, the messenger who was supposed to come and get Rabban Gamliel, he comes to the Beit Midrash. Amar Beit Mishar, Amar Balachotem Mitbakesh, Balachotem Mitbakesh. Rashi says Balachotem means one of two possibilities here. It either means the Gadol Ador, or it means Bal Koma B'tzura, someone who is of position of authority, a position of stature, that he is Mitbakesh. He did it in a hint way that Rabban Gamliel should understand that the Romans were after him at that point. Shaman Rabban Gamliel, Rabban Gamliel gets wind of this. Here's what he says. Azal Tasha Minayu. He goes ahead and he runs away and hides from them. Azal de Gabe Bitzin'ah. Then he speaks to this individual, the person who brought the message from Rome in order to kill him, speaks to him privately to discuss what's happening. I'm like, Imatzilna Lach Maiti Li the Amudati. So the executioner who's supposed to get Rabban Gamliel, he says, if I save you, will you bring me to Olam Haba? I'm like, hey, Rabban Gamliel says, yes. I'm like, Ishtabali. Swear to me that that's the case. Ishtabalei, Rabban Gamliel swears to him. Salik the Igra, he went up to the roof. Nafil, he fell off of it. Umit, and died. Ugmiri, and there was some sort of misora amongst the Romans. The Chigazri Gzerta, whenever they put a decree in place. Umit Chadminayu, and one of the people in the position of authority died. Mevatli the Gzertayu, they rescinded the decree. Because they saw that as a bad omen, that if someone died after they put a decree in place, it must be that that decree was not right, or the gods didn't like that decree, and that's why someone died, and therefore they would rescind the decree. So exactly that's what happened here. Because they, one of the individuals, the executioner her, died, they rescinded the decree. Yatztaba kol v'amra, adon ze mizuman l'chayi olam haba. This individual is going to olam haba, like Rabban Gamliel had promised him, and therefore Rabban Gamliel escapes from the gzera, the decree. At least this time he escapes from the decree. We know from the Asara Harugei Malchut that he does not escape forever because he's then taken and executed amongst the Asara Harugei Malchut along with Rabbi Yeshua Kohen Gadol. So now we have all of these items, these five items that took place on Tisha B'Av. All of these are items which are a certain amount of finality to them. That is, in terms of the people in the Midbar not willing to go into Eretz Yisrael, forfeiting their ability to go to Eretz Yisrael, and the wiping out of the Dor HaMidbar. Obviously, the Churban HaBayit in both the first and second time is the end of an era, the end of the Shekhinah being present, Bigalui, in the Mikdash. And then Churban of Beitar, which is the end of Mered Bar Kochva, and Nechrash Ha'ir, which is also brings a certain amount of finality to the Churban HaBayit. Alright, so now the Gemara brings an additional agarata with regards to the Churban HaBayit, which says that Tanu Banan, Mishacharav HaBayit Berishona, Nidkabsu Kitot Kitot Shel Pirchei Kuna, that when the Bayit HaRishon was destroyed, then these teams or schools of young Kohanim gathered together, Maftechot HaHechal B'yadan, and they had the keys to the Hechal in their hands. They climbed onto the roof of the Eichal v'amru lefanav, and they said, Ribono shel olam, hoyov lo zachinu liot gizbarim ne'amanim, since we are not faithful treasurers of your mikdash, or keepers of your mikdash, you maftechot mesurot lecha. The keys should be returned to you. Vizarkom klapei malo, they threw them up in the air, towards the sky, v'yatztak ein pisat yad, and then, as if a hand extended out of the sky, Vikil Baltan Mehem, and accepted them from him. from the Kohanim. Veim kafsu v'naflu l'tocha ur. And then they jumped off the roof there into the fire. V'aleim konein Yishayahu Navi. And on them, Yishayahu Navi has a kinah, which is Masa Gei Chizayon. It's the burden of the valley of vision. Whereas Rashi over here says, what does it mean? Masa Gei Chizayon, Yerushalayim, Shako Mistaklim Sham. Chizayon, not from the vision, like a prophecy, but rather Chizayon, like some place where everybody gazes towards. Mala Cheifo, Ki Alayta Kulach Legagot. What's going on with you that everybody's up on the roofs? Tishuot Mleya. There is uproars everywhere. Ir homiya. There's a tumultuous city. Kiriya aliza. From this joyous city. Chalalayich lo chalalei cherev. Those that are dead are not dead by the sword. Vlo meitei milchama. And not dead from battle. But rather, they're dead because they jumped off the roof of the Eichal. Af. Makosh Baruch Hu Ne'amar, so too, by Makosh Baruch Hu says similarly, it's a couple of psukim later in that parak in Yishayahu, Mikarkar Kir, the breaking or the breaching of the walls, Vishoa El Hahar, and they're shouting and noise towards the mountain. So the Gemara here, or Rashi explains that Mikarkar really comes from the word Yilala, means to take up a kina and to be in sorrow and sighing. So then he says, Mekarkar Kir Vishoa. He calls Kir Shoa is Konein Vizoek. He's saying, Kinot, lamenting and screaming out, Elahar. To, where Elahar doesn't mean to the har here, but etahar. For, because of the har, which is the har Tzion Shishomein, because of the destruction of the Mikdash. So Hashem, in a sense, seconds this idea that there is a Kina and Zaka that's coming because of the loss of the Mikdash. And the loss of the Pirchei Kuna over here. So the Pirchei Kuna returned the keys to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is as if we're saying that the Shekhinah that was present in the Mikdash now removes itself or is taken back. Now again, that's the Shekhinah and its presence Begalut. The Shekhinah B'tzinah remains. And that's why we always say that the Aron was Nignaz there by Yoshiyahu HaMelech, and the presence of Shekhinah is always there in Yerushalayim by the Makom HaMikdash on Har HaBayit. It's just not manifest like the way it is when the Mikdash is extant, which is that we don't see a manifestation, begalui, of the Shekhinah. It's only there, betzinah, or that's the way that Hashem interacts with the world. Then we have the Pirchei Kuna, who felt that they no longer serve their purpose. Remember, the Kohanim are there to work in the Mikdash with the Churban HaBayit. In a sense, they believe that their job or their mission was now meaningless, and they jump off the roof. Question about permissibility of committing suicide is interesting. It is a question that comes up a lot. There are numerous midrashim with regards to the Churban HaBayit and stories about the Churban HaBayit where we know that the midrash tells us they committed suicide. And even though in general there is a belief in Yahadut that we do not commit suicide, that a person who takes their own life is in a sense equivalent to murder, that one doesn't have the right to do that, one may not do that, and there's a restriction against doing it. Nevertheless, we find throughout Jewish history people who are committing suicide in order to either protect themselves or stop themselves from being tortured by the enemy and forcing them to not do the mitzvot, or knowing that the enemy is going to do something terrible to them in terms of forcing them to do an avera, and therefore they commit suicide beforehand. And based on these midrashim, even though we never have any explicit statement by the Gemara condoning this behavior, the fact that all these midrashim exist is almost an implicit condoning of this behavior by the Gemara. And therefore we find many stories over time of this type of behavior, including in the time of the Holocaust, where people took their lives into their own hands. But I'm really talking about where you have large numbers of individuals. That's really what the midrashim in Tisha B'Av talk about here. You're talking about the Pirchei Kuna. There's also the story in Gittin with regards to the young boys and young girls who go out to sea and they commit suicide because they think they're going to be misused or abused by the Romans. We find the same thing with regards to the Beit Yaakov school in the time of the Holocaust, where the girls gathered together. They had been taken by the Nazis to be or to sleep with the soldiers, the Nazi soldiers, when they came. And they decide amongst them, they write a letter to America, which was sent and then received afterwards, that the entire school was going to commit suicide so that the Nazis wouldn't do that or wouldn't be able to carry out their plans with them. So we see again, over and over again, that type of behavior without any statement by the Gemara to the contrary, and almost in a sense by bringing these Midrashim that it's a condoning of such behavior. And again, it's not times when it's willy-nilly, one can't take their life. In those cases, these are exceptional cases where either they're going to be tortured or there is some sort of tremendous avera that's going to be committed over here in order to prevent that they commit suicide. And that's what the Kohanim, the Pirchei Kuna, did over here. Find a similar story in Josephus with regards to Bayit Sheni, that the Kohanim, or the younger Kohanim, went up onto the roof of the Heichal when the Romans entered into the Mikdash in order to protect themselves. They are offered, according to Josephus, refuge to come down, but they, I think, refuse, or they say yes, and then afterwards they start to attack again, and then they're eventually just killed or destroyed along with the Mikdash. Okay, now, the Gemara continues here with the next piece of the Mishnah, which is the Tanaic statement, Mishenichnas Av Mematim B'Simcha. One enters into Av, we reduce the amount of joy that we experience or that we get engaged with when we come into the Av. Now, we know there are two statements that are famous. The Gemara is about to bring the other one, which is Mishenichnas Av Mematim B'Simcha and Mishenichnas Ardar Marbim B'Simcha. Only Mishenichnas Av Mematim B'Simcha is a Tanaic work or Tanaic statement. The statement of Mishenichnas Ardar Marbim B'Simcha is an Amoraic statement that is brought off of the statement of Tisha B'Av. It's a derivative of that statement. So the primary statement is about Av, and the secondary statement is about Adar, and that's what we're going to see now. Amar Rav Yehuda Brei Derav Shmuel Bar Shilat, Mishmei Derav, Kishem Shemenichnas Av Mematim B'Simcha, Kach Mishenichnas Adar Marbim Simcha. Just like by Av, we're Mema'it the Simcha, because that's an inauspicious time. By Adar, we're Marbim B'Simcha, because that is an auspicious time. So Adar, in a sense, is the counter, or the exact opposite, the polar opposite to Av, where Av and Tisha B'Av are days that are, and a month that's considered to be inauspicious. Adar is just the opposite, where Adar is considered to be a month that is auspicious, especially the day of Purim, a day when Ne'apach, for the Jews, from bad to good. So I'm Rav Papa brings from that a conclusion, which is, Hilkach, B'Yisrael D'itlei Dina B'Hadi Nachri, a Jew who has a altercation or a court case against a non-Jew, Lishtameit Minei B'Av, he should try not to have it happen in the month of Av, Derei Amazle, because that's an inauspicious time for the Jews. And when it comes around to Adar, he should try to accelerate or make sure that the case takes place then, the Bar Yamazle, because that is a month that is auspicious for the Jews. So therefore, you try to do more in the month of Adar and do less in the month of Av. And again, that's brought down the halacha with regards to the month of Av. We try to avoid doing things during the month of Av. And then afterwards, when the Shulchan Aruch speaks about it, he says, well, at least we should try and make sure not to do it before the 15th of Av, and then even before Tisha B'Av. So the best thing is not to do it in Av at all. Second best is to do, at least avoid it for the first 15 days of Av. And the other one is it, just at least avoid it through the 9th of Av or the 10th of Av, because after that it turns out to be less inauspicious in terms of the month. And we know, like we saw in the Mishnah, that the 15th of Av is a significant day, which is almost a pivot point or a change in the nature of Av to be a more exciting or happy month. Okay, so Rashi says that the reason that Ba'adar Marbim B'Simcha, it's a very interesting Rashi says, Mipnei Yimei Nisim Hayu LiYisrael Purim UPesach. Rashi says it's not only Purim, but it's also the lead-in to Pesach. And therefore, Adar is an auspicious time, not only because of the Purim that took place then, which was a significant turn of events, but also that it is the preparatory stages into Yitziat Mitzrayim. And just like we say all the time that 30 days prior to the Chag, we're already engaged in the context of the Chag, so too Adar has parts of the miracles of Nisan also that touch it or that flavor it. And therefore, Adar is considered to be an auspicious month for the Jews, not only because of Purim, but also because of the Yitziat Mitzrayim, which takes place in the subsequent month, which really starts from Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So Adar is sitting on the doorstep of Nisan, and Rashi says that they're painted by both of those things, both by Purim and Yitziat Mitzrayim affect the month of Adar. And that's why it's considered to be an auspicious time for the Jews. Now the Gemara is going to bring down two interpretations from Rav Yehuda Brei de Rav Shmuel Bar Shilat, Mishmei de Rav. The only reason they were brought here is because they're all authored by the same individual, not because they have any connection to our Gemara. Which is the pasuk of them, Latet Lechem, Achrit Vitikva, to give you in the end hope and survival. Amar Rav Yehuda Brei de Rav Shmuel Bar Shilat, Mishmei de Rav, Elu Dekalim Uklei Pishtan. That is what Bavel has in plenty, which is palm trees and clay pishtan. So even though you were going to exile, the exile will not be so terrible because when you get there, there will be which to survive with. And we saw that earlier in the Masechta with regards to the dates. The dates were plenty in Bavel, and therefore they had what to eat, and they had what to be mitparnes with, and clay pishtan, which is clothing. So the basic needs were plentiful in Bavel. So that was some sort of consolence to the people that even though they were going to Bavel into exile, they would still be able to survive and to remain with hope and future in Bavel. Then the next thing, Vayomer Re'ei Re'ach B'ni K'Re'ach Sadeh Asher Berachu Hashem, in the Beracha of Yitzchak, Am Rav Yehuda B'Rei D'Rav Mashmo Bar Shilat Mishmei D'Rav K'Re'ach Sadeh Shel Tapuchim. It's like the field of apples. Tosafot has an alternative girsa, which is K'Re'ach Etrugim. It's like the smell of the etrugim. And that might be interesting that it's etrugim because he says it's kereach sadeh asher beracho Hashem. And the Gemara discusses what was the tree that Adam HaRishon ate from. One of the opinions over there that it was an etrug tree. So over here, if he smells the reach of a sadeh asher beracho Hashem, that would be like the sadeh of Gan Eden where the etrog was that type of tree that was found there and that was the tree by which Adam HaRishon sinned, tapuchim, and then if it's k'reach sadeh shel tapuchim, that reminds us of the midrash, which talks about the tapuchim or the etz tapuach in Mitzrayim, which is tachad tapuach or atich, which the midrash Shir HaShirim tells us refers to in Mitzrayim, where the women used to dress up and make themselves up in order to attract the men, because they believed in tikva, they believed in the hope of the continuation of the Jewish people. That would also be this idea of k'reach sadeh shel tapuchim, which has that positive connotation. Right now, the Gemara deals with the statements in the Mishnah as to the restrictions that are associated with Tisha B'Av and the time period prior to Tisha B'Av. It says, Shabbat shechal Tisha B'Av liot betocha, the week in which Tisha B'Av transpires or takes place, asurim l'saper u'dechabes. One may not get a haircut and one may not launder during that period of time. Amar Rav Nachman lo shanu alecha beis. That's only true if you launder v'lo bosh and wear that launder clothing. Aval lecha beis ulaniach mutar. But to launder and then leave it till after Tisha B'Av, that is totally fine. Rav Sheshet Amar afilu lecha beis ulaniach asur. Even to launder and to leave it over is restricted. Amar Rav Sheshet Teda. I can prove that to you. The batle katsri debei Rav. Because the launderers of the house of Rav, or the city of Rav, they desisted from their work during the Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av. Now, these were people who were just doing the laundry. They weren't wearing the laundry, yet they did not do any work during this period of time. The launderers are called Katsrei, Rashi says, because Katsrei refers to the stomping, to stepping on the clothing. That's how they got it clean, when they used to step on it or squeeze it. And Tosafot says katsrei means because when you launder the clothing, it gets smaller, it shrinks. So that's why they're called katsrei. Others say that it's because of the, when they used to fix the begadim up, when they washed them, they used to pull out a row of string in the begad in order to make it clean and to fix it up. So katsrei, they made the begad shorter because of that. Okay, now, Meitiv Rav Amnuna. It says that in a case where Tisha B'Av falls out on Friday, that on the fifth day, meaning on Thursday, they're allowed to do these items because of Kavod HaShabbat. Now over here, the Bach adds into the Girsa, my mutarim. What does it mean that it's mutar? Ilema, if you want to say that the mutar over here is the Chabes Lobosh, means to launder and wear it, Ma'kvad Shabbatika. What does that have to do with Kavod HaShabbat? Shabbat is when you need to wear the clothing. It's not today. Elo laniach. it's clear that we're talking about laundering in order to leave it over to wear for Shabbat. That's only mutar when Tisha B'Av is on a Friday and Erev Tisha B'Av is on Thursday, and you can do it on that Thursday. Aval Shabbat kulo asur. But any other time during the week would be asur. And that's even l'chabes, just simply to launder, even though you're not going to wear it. It says, no, l'olam l'chabes l'bosh. We're talking about here to launder it and wear it. She'en lo ela chaluk echad. We're talking about a case where he has no other beged. He only has one beged. So the only way that he can do the laundry is if he does it right now on Thursday for Kavod Shabbat and he puts it back on. Because he has nothing else to wear. Of course he has to put it back on. He's not going to launder it on Friday because that's too close to Shabbat and they're osek in the preparations of Shabbat. So he does it on the Thursday. So why is he wearing it right away? Is because he has nothing else to wear. Someone only has one beged, mutar lechabso b'chol shel moed. Person's not to launder it on chol moed. Meaning that generally on chol moed, kvisa is asura, but there is an exception for someone who has only one beged. If they have no other beged to wear, then on chol moed, they're allowed to launder it. And there the Gemara says, ezoro mochia chalav. That when he's laundering the beged, he has nothing to wear. So the fact that he's just wearing his belt, or he has nothing around him, he has no clothing on when he's laundering his clothing, it's clear that he has no other clothing. And that's why he's laundering in this manner, and everybody knows why he's laundering. But otherwise, if you do have other begadim, you wouldn't be allowed to launder. But here we're talking about laundering and wearing it. But maybe if it was just laundering alone, that would be mutar. Tosfot over here brings down some extrapolations of this din, which actually have application l'halacha today, which is that for young kids who do soil their clothing all the time, they have the equivalent din as if they have only one piece of clothing. Since anything they put on, they get dirty immediately and needs to be laundered, then their clothing is considered as if they only have one beged to wear because they're going to always have to change their clothing, and therefore one is allowed to launder for the ktanim during Chol HaMoed or on the 9 days in a case where they have no other clothing. Again, there's different severities during that period of the 9 days, and in which we try to dissuade people from doing any laundry whatsoever. And if one can, they should try not to do laundry at all during the 9 days. But this comes out or is extrapolated from our din over here. Now, even though people only have one hat to wear or one turban to wear, they still can't wash it on Chol HaMoed, because there you can't say Ezero Mochia Chalab. There you can't say that it's clear that they're laundering it because they only have one of these, because there it's never clear that they only have one, and therefore it's, even though technically you only have one of them, still not allowed or permitted to launder them on Chol HaMoed. All right. Itmar Nami, we have another statement by the Amoraim. Amra Bibin Yamin, Amra Belazar, Loshanu Elochabes, Velu Bosh. That's only true if you launder and you wear it. Is it restricted during the 9 days? Velaniach Mutar. But to launder and leave it over, then it's Mutar. Meitave. So now we're going to bring Asur the Chabes, Lifnei Tisha B'Av, Afilo Aniach Lachar Tisha B'Av. Now we have a Tanaic work that says one may not launder before Tisha B'Av, even if one intends to leave it till after Tisha B'Av. V'gehutz shalanu kigibus shalahem. In our gehutz, which is our type of ironing or heavy-duty cleaning, is the equivalent of their regular laundering. Uklei pishtan ein behem mishum gehutz. And klei pishtan, linen garments, have no din of gehutz. The Gemara says, tuyufta. That is a very difficult question that undermines that premise that you can launder and leave it for after Tisha B'Av. And sure enough, that's the din. One may not launder both to wear, and one may not launder to leave over to after Tisha B'Av. The reason for that is different. The reason why one may not launder during the 9 days is because that is mesiach dato mi'avilut. It takes or distracts the individual from the morning. It's as if he doesn't care about the morning, is focusing on laundering. And that's why laundering, qua laundering, is asur, because it's mesiach dat. There's a second restriction, which is that if you have laundered clothing, you may not put it on during the 9 days, because that's a problem of tanug, of pleasure. And we're trying to diminish the pleasures, mema'atim b'simcha, and therefore you can't wear freshly laundered clothing. That's both clothing that was laundered during the 9 days, as well as laundry that was laundered prior to the 9 days. So that's why you have two separate restrictions here. You have a restriction against laundering, just laundering, period. You have a separate restriction against wearing laundered clothing, One because of Hesach Adat, the other one because of Tanug, and that's the way that we paskin in Alocha. Now, Shalach Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Giure Mishmeid Rabbi Yochanan, Afu Pish Amru Klei Pishtan Ein Behem Mishum Gehutz. Even though they said that these Klei Pishtan don't have any din of Gehutz, Aval Asur Lulavshan B'Shabbat Shechal Tisha B'Av Diot B'Tucha. You still can't wear them in the week in which Tisha B'Av falls out. So what we have here, and this actually turns out to be a major machloket amongst the Rishonim, is to determine what the Gemara meant here. The Gemara made two statements. One is that Gehutz, our Gehutz in Bavel, is equivalent to the kibbutz, the laundering in Eretz Yisrael, so that you would extrapolate from that, or understand from that, or infer from that, that our laundering in Bavel doesn't have any status, and you would be allowed to do it during the week that Tisha B'Av falls out. And that's the way that Rashi infers or deduces from this here, which is Aval kibbutz shelanu mutar. Our kibbutz is mutar. There are other Rishonim that disagree with that and say that there are qualifications with regards to the klei pishtan, whether it's new or it's old, and so on and so forth, and basically come to the conclusion that even by klei pishtan, where there's no gehutz, it's asur. And even our kibbutz is still restricted. And that's our practice today, that even though maybe we don't have laundering at the level that they have, maybe you would call that dry cleaning, we still do not perform any of these types of laundering or any types of gehutz during the 9 days, even though from the Gemara it seems to be that there's more room to be mekil. Nevertheless, most of the Rishonim in the end are much more machmir than we would have expected. Because many of them claim that we really don't know what kibbutz and gehutz are, and therefore we're choshesh that anything we do either qualifies as kibbutz or gehutz, and then we restrict everything in order to be certain that we're not violating this restriction of kibbutz. Right. So the argument that you're making, both regards to kibbutz, and you could make it again with regards to shaving, which is that in the time of the Gemara, shaving and laundering were major undertakings. And so therefore, both with regards to Chol HaMoed and with regards to the Shua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, maybe the din should be different today. And there are those that argue that way, especially with regards to shaving on Chol HaMoed, that maybe the din is different then in their day because it's not a major undertaking and people do it on a daily basis. And the same is true with laundering. Although most of the poskim do not say that by laundering, despite the fact that what you're saying is true, that laundering today is less of a burden and less of an undertaking. I think the quantity of laundering that we do, I mean, that what was taken out from a qualitative standpoint, I mean, the laundering was a larger undertaking that in their time. Today, you make up for that in volume, that we end up laundering much more in terms of volume because we have more clothing today. And so it probably nets out to be the same. And nobody is matir in general with regards to laundry, except with the exceptions of the special cases like the children, or cases where there's chaluk echad, the person only has one piece of clothing. All right, so now the Gemara continues with the machloket here with regards to Shvua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av. So here, Amar Rav, lo shanu ela lifanav. It's only true, Shvua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, the restrictions only apply to before Tisha B'Av. Aval acharav mutar. After Tisha B'Av, everything is mutar. Shmuel Amar, afilu acharav nami asur. The week in which Tisha B'Av falls means it's asur before Tisha B'Av and after Tisha B'Av, the entire week in which Tisha B'Av falls. Right, depends. According to this, if Tisha B'Av falls out on a Sunday, Rav would say there is no Shvua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, but Shmuel will say there is a Shvua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, which would be the entire week after Tisha B'Av, which means Sunday through the subsequent Friday. That's the way Shmuel learns. Shmuel learns that it's not only beforehand, but is also afterwards. Shvua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av literally means the week in which Tisha B'Av falls, irrespective if the days are before or after Tisha B'Av, whereas Rav says it only has to do with the days that are prior to Tisha B'Av. Where it says, Meitavei, Shabbat Shechal Tisha B'Av Liot B'Tocha Asur L'Saper L'Chabes U'B'Chamishi Mutarim Mikrimei Kvod HaShabbat. The week in which Tisha B'Av falls out, one may not launder, one may not get a haircut. But if Tisha B'Av falls out on a Friday, then on that Thursday, Mutarim Mipnei Kvod HaShabbat. Ketzad, what's that case? Chal Liot B'Echad B'Shabbat, if it falls out on a Sunday, Mutar L'Chabes Kol HaShabbat Kula. You're allowed to launder that entire week. B'sheni, b'shlishi, u'rivi, u'b'chamishi, if it falls out on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, lefanav asur, l'acharav mutar. Beforehand is asur, afterwards is mutar. Chaliot be'erev Shabbat, if it falls out on a Friday, Tishabav mutar lechabes b'chamishim ipnei kavod Shabbat. One can launder on the Thursday because of kavod Shabbat. V'imlo kibes b'chamishi. He did not launder on that Thursday. B'chamishim mutar lechabes be'erev Shabbat. V'namin cholamala. Then late on the Friday, late on the day of Tishabav, one can do laundry at that point in time. And Layit ala Abai. Abai cursed anybody who did laundry on Tisha B'Av itself, even though he'd forgotten to do it on Thursday, but if on Tisha B'Av itself he felt it was wholly inappropriate for one to do kibus, even late on the day of Tisha B'Av. So now Layit ala Abai vitem Rav Acha bar Yaakov aha. Abai, or some say it's Rav Acha bar Yaakov, used to curse out anybody who did this or had this practice to launder on Tisha B'Av itself. Now Chaliot b'sheni u'b'chamishi. Now, that was an interruption. That was an Amoraic interruption in the middle of a Braita. And now we're going back to the Braita, which is that if it falls out on a Monday and Thursday, Tisha B'Av, Korim Shlosha, you read three Aliyot like you would do it on any other Monday and Thursday, Maftir Echad. And one of the Aliyot is a Maftir, meaning Shlishi becomes the Maftir. B'Shlishi Urvi, if it falls out on a Tuesday or Wednesday, Kore Echad, there's only one Aliyah, Maftir Echad. And the Maftir is that one individual. And here, if you look in Tosafot, it's interesting. He says, Mikan mochiach Rabbeinu Tam. From here, Rabbeinu Tam proves that Maftir ole leminyan shiva. That the Maftir counts to one of the seven aliyot. It happens to be, we're going to get to this in the Gemara Megillah and Daf Chav Gimel. There's a major machloket in the Rishonim. What is the conclusion of the Gemara with regards to Maftir? Is Maftir ole leminyan shiva? Does Maftir count as one of the seven aliyot you need on Shabbat? Or is Maftir separate? There's a large Tosafot there on Daf Chav Gimel. It says that our practice today to say a Chatzi Kaddish between the Aliyot and the Maftir is a clear demonstration or statement that we believe that the Maftir is not Ole the Minyan Shiva. Therefore, we're Mafsik with the Chatzi Kaddish between the seven Aliyot and the Maftir. Over there, Tosafot continues and says something even more dramatic, which he says that that's the same reason we say Chatzi Kaddish in Mariv. The reason we say Chatzi Kaddish in Mariv before Shmon Esrei is to show you that it's over at that point. That there is no smichat gula tefillah on Mariv time, and you really don't have to daven Shmon Esrei. Shmon Esrei is only a reshut, and therefore we say a Chatzi Kaddish to demonstrate. Just like by Maftir, we're demonstrating it's not part of the Minyan Shiva, so too the Chatzi Kaddish by Mariv is showing that the Shmon Esrei is really voluntary and outside of what you necessarily have to do, and it's not, there's no din of smichat gula tefillah by Mariv. So that we'll leave to discuss more in depth, in Daf Chav Gimel in Megillah. But here, the Rabbeinu Tam proves from our Gemara, you see here, that the Maftir is counted as one of the Aliyot, which is true. We always count the Maftir as one of the Aliyot, unless it's Shabbat or Yom Tov or Yom Kippur. On those days, the Maftir is separate. But on a weekday, whenever we have a fast day, the Maftir counts as one of the Aliyot. Although the Rabbeinu Tam is saying it more broadly, we only have that practice by weekdays. And Rabbi Yossi Omer, Lo'olam Karim Shlosha Maftir Echad. Yossi says, no matter when it falls out, you have three Aliyot, and one of them is Maftir. Now the Gemara goes back to what we were saying before, to Yufta de Shmuel. This Braita undermines the position of Shmuel because the Braita is explicit in the fact that it's only before Tisha B'Av that Shvur Shechal Tisha B'Av Bo falls out. So Amalcha Shmuel, Tanae here, it absolutely happens to be a Machloka Tanaim. Titania, we have a Braita. Tisha B'Av Shechaliot B'Shabbat, V'chein Erev Tisha B'Av Shechaliot B'Shabbat. So the possibility either that Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbat itself, or Tisha B'Av falls out on Sunday. Either way, Tisha B'Av happens on Sunday. Whether it falls out on Shabbat, it's Nidcheta Sunday, or whether it really falls out on Sunday, that's when Tisha B'Av falls out. Today, Tisha B'Av can only fall out in one of 4 days of the week, and two of those days are Shabbat and Sunday. So actually, Sunday will get a disproportionate number of times that Tisha B'Av falls out on it, because it's both Tisha B'Av for Sunday, and when Tisha B'Av is on Shabbat, we also fast on Sunday. So out of the four possible days in which Tisha B'Av could fall out, which are Tuesday, Thursday, Shabbat, and Sunday, then Shabbat and Sunday gets double the amount because of that. So now, a case where Tisha B'Av falls out on Sunday, Ochel v'shoteh kol tzorcho. On that day, meaning the Shabbat preceding Tisha B'Av, you can eat as much as you want. Maleh al shulchano afilu k'sudat shlomo b'shato. And you can bring onto your table even like the size of the sudav shlomo ha-melech, who was feeding large numbers of people and had a tremendous kingdom. B'shato means at the time he was the king. That's based on machloket in the Gemara Megillah, as to whether Shlomo HaMelech, after he was deposed from the kingship, does he return to being king, or does he not return to be a king afterwards? So B'Shato means when he was king. So that way, it's according to all the Deot. So there, on Shabbat leading into Tisha B'Av, one can eat as much as they want, all the way up to the moment before Tisha B'Av. There's no Suda Mafseket. There is no Mosifim Michol Al HaKodesh. You eat up to Shkia on Shabbat as much as you want. Vasur l'saper l'chabes mirosh chodesh v'ratanit divi Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says you cannot launder and you cannot get haircuts from Rosh Chodesh Av until Tisha B'Av. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, kol ha-chodesh kulo asur. The entire month of Av is asur. Shem Galmei Omer, yinu asur lo-to Shabbat bilvad. That week alone. Now, that week alone, it just fell out on Shabbat or Sunday. So what does it mean that week alone is asur? It means the week that's subsequent to it. I mean the week in which Tisha B'Av fell out. If it's on Sunday, then the entire week subsequent to that is asur. And that's who Shmuel will hold, like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who says that that's the case. V'tani idach, another braita that reiterates this. Noheg Evel, Mirosh Chodesh Ad Tanit. We are Noheg, mourning from Rosh Chodesh until the Tanit, Divi Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Meir, Kol HaChodesh Kulo Asur. The entire month is problematic. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Meir, Yenu Asur, Elo Tosh Shabbat Bilvad. That week itself. Am Rabbi Yochanan, Shloshtam Mikra Achad Darshu. They all dash in the same pasuk, which is Dichtiv. Vishbati Kol Mesosa, Chaga Chodsha Vishabta. Then Hashem says, I'm going to wipe out, I'm going to silence all of its joy. It's chag, it's holidays, chodsha, it's months, v'shabta, and it's weeks. Manda amar mirosh chodesh v'atanit mechaga. He learns it out of chaga, I mean chag being the Tisha B'Av itself. And therefore he says from Rosh Chodesh, which is a chag, until Tisha B'Av, that is the restriction period because chaga is the focus here. Manda amar kol chodesh kulo, he learns it out of sur, he learns it out from mechodsha. Manda amar kol shabbat kulo, the entire week, Rav Shimon Gamliel, is a sur, is mishabta. He learns it out from Shabbat. Amarova, and here's the important thing, Halocha ki Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, ve'amarova Halocha ki Rabbi Meir. Rava says Halocha is both like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and like Rabbi Meir, even though they're mutually exclusive. V'tarvaya l'kula. We're going to take the two tzadim l'kula from their opinions. V'tzricha, what does that mean? Di'ash mina Halocha ki Rabbi Meir, if I say Halocha ki Rabbi Meir, ha'vamina afilu mirosh chodesh. That the restrictions of mourning start from Rosh Chodesh, like Rabbi Meir says, k'mash v'lan Halocha ki Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that's only Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, and not from Rosh Chodesh. V'yashmina Halacha Ki Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. If you told me just Halacha was like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Avamina Afilu L'Acharav. That even after Tisha B'Av would be restricted, K'mash V'lan Halacha Ki Rabbi Meir, that only applies before. So you take the Kula of Rabbi Meir, which is only before Tisha B'Av, and the Kula of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, it's only Shavua Shechal Bo, that's the din of Avelut leading into Tisha B'Av, which is that restriction only applies to Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av. And that is Medina de Gemara, Medina de Mishnah. The only time that there's a real restriction is Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, but the min of the Ashkenazim is to extend that back to Rosh Chodesh, and the guards to haircuts and weddings, we extend that even back to Yitzayin B'Tammuz for the 3 weeks. So that is the minhag Ashkenaz. The minhag Sfaradim is only to keep, generally, Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, although many Sfaradim also have the practice to start already from Rosh Chodesh. So the minog was a minog that's brought up by the Rishonim to take it back to Shivasar B'Tammuz because they say it's an inauspicious time and they really dealt with items that have a longer duration to them. So first of all, in terms of inauspicious time, the 3 weeks are considered to be an inauspicious time and therefore one does not get married during that time. So that has to do with Nisuim and Rikud and Micholot and music. The other thing is haircuts, the saper. Now haircuts, in general, you get a haircut every 30 days or so. So the significance of not getting a haircut is really only relevant if you have a period of time that's more extended. So therefore, the minhag became to not get a haircut for that entire period of the 3 weeks, rather than simply the time period that surrounded Tisha B'Av, where really you wouldn't even know if someone didn't take a haircut for 3 days or for the couple of days that were before Tisha B'Av. So they extended that restriction to be that larger period from what we call Ben HaMitzarim, from the time of Shivasar B'Tammuz until Tisha B'Av. Now, there's an important statement here in Tosafot, which is, Mikom Mokom, Ichmir Lanu Moreno Rashi, Atei Tzadidim Shana Lekubeis, Oto Shavua Sheyaba Tisha B'Av Kodem Atanit. So now he says that, Rashi, our teacher Rashi says that it was Asur to give over our clothing to non-Jewish launderers in the week in which Tisha B'Av fell out. Because there you don't have a problem. You don't have a problem with Hesach Adat. You're not doing the laundry. And you don't have a problem with wearing it because you're not going to wear it until after Tisha B'Av. Nevertheless, Rashi was machmir and says you shouldn't do it. Then, the next statement, which is important, aval. Heicha dachal Tisha B'Av behei b'Shabbat. When Tisha B'Av falls out on a Thursday, mutar lechabes ulesaper mechatzot ve'elech. It's an amazing Tosfot. Because it says, on Tisha B'Av itself, if it falls out on a Thursday, you're allowed to get a haircut after chatzot, and you're allowed to do your laundry after chatzot on Tisha B'Av itself. Mipnei kvod Shabbat. For Kavod Shabbat, Dein Lamtin at Erev Shabbat. You don't wait until Erev Shabbat, Mibnei Torah Shabbat, because then you get into trouble. So Tosafot over here claims that if Tisha B'Av falls out on a Thursday, like the Gemara said before, if it falls out on a Friday, you can do it on the Thursday. Tosafot says it's the same. It's true if Tisha B'Av falls out on Thursday, that the ability to do things for Kavod Shabbat is extended back onto Tisha B'Av itself, and for Chatzot and Eilech on Tisha B'Av itself, one is permitted to launder and get haircuts because of Kavod Shabbat. Now, the Beit Yosef, you can see over here that it's mentioned that the Beit Yosef in Or Chaim, Tafkuf Nun Aleph, takes issue with this Tosafot and says that he thinks he's absolutely incorrect, because we saw before that Layit Abayi cursed somebody only when Tisha B'Av was on Friday, and he was clearly getting ready for Shabbat late on the day on Friday, he cursed them for doing it. So certainly when Tisha B'Av falls out on a Thursday, we're not going to allow you to do this late on the day on Tisha B'Av. And therefore, he says that on the Yom Atzmo of Tisha B'Av, nobody is matir to do kibbutz or to do haircuts, and he says that it's restricted. Again, like we said earlier at the beginning of this year, there still is that dispensation different from other years, which is that in other years, the Avelud extends onto the 10th. When it comes to Tisha B'Av that falls out on a Thursday, then the Kavod Shabbat, we suspend those items, some of them starting on Thursday night, some of them starting on Friday morning, in order to prepare for the Shabbat, in order to get ready for the Shabbat. Now, it's only items that take a lot of time, and that normally one would do on a, before Shabbat on a Thursday, those things are suspended. Other items, which you normally wouldn't do until late on Friday afternoon anyway, then some of those items may not be permitted. That is actually a machloket in the modern day poskim. As to whether, for instance, shaving on Friday after Tisha B'Av falls out on a Thursday, do you have to wait until Friday afternoon to shave? Because that's normally when you would shave for Shabbat. So why should you shave earlier? That's not covered as Shabbat. No, normally for covered as Shabbat, you would do it. Or do we say, in a sense, it's hutra? Once we say that Tisha B'Av is on Thursday and then covered as Shabbat is mutar, then you can even shave on the morning, on Friday morning. And some even want to suggest that it's back to on Thursday night. It might actually be a machloka between the Aruch HaShulchan and Mishnah Berurah as to when the Heter starts, whether it starts on the Thursday night or only on the Friday morning. Okay, we're going to stop over here.